Okay, good morning all. This is the BC member call of October 8th, 2015. The next BC meeting will be a face-to-face meeting on Tuesday of the ICANN meeting in Dublin in 12 days. And this call, a lot of it is preparatory for what we're going to be facing in Dublin. I'm going to run very quickly through my part of the agenda. Not surprisingly, given that I was unopposed, I prevailed in the council election, but I want to thank everyone in the BC for the confidence shown in the vote and, of course, renew my pledge to faithfully represent BC positions in council deliberations over the next 2 years in this term you've just reelected me for. We are going to start in the next day or so a council election with probably about a week to vote, maybe a few days less. The XCOM has to decide. We have three volunteers to fill the empty slot on the credentials committee created by the departure of Martin Sutton. That's in alphabetical order: John Berard, Marilyn Cade, and Stephen Coates. I believe you're all quite familiar with them. I see Steve Coates on the call today. And thank you for volunteering, Steve, and we're going to hold that election with the intent of announcing the winner at the BC meeting in Dublin, and we're going to be, let me segue from that to noting that we're going to have a bunch of upcoming elections in November. All the officer, other than council members, have to be filled by election, and also it's my understanding that the a credentials committee seats filled by me in my chairman capacity of the committee, and by I'm having a brain seizure here, but we need to fill both positions here, term limited. Also, my understanding is Angie Graves' finance position is going to have to be refilled because of time limits, and so we're going to be holding multiple elections toward the end of the year. And I just want to note, I sent you all an extensive memo on Tuesday about the leadership call held by Fadi and Steve Crocker with supporting organization and advisory committee leadership, and clearly the press is on to try to come up with a final accountability plan, or move quickly toward getting to a final one in Dublin. The schedule for Dublin is subject to change at any minute, including while we're there, to provide more time for accountability discussions. And there is this timing issue that there is this conundrum that to be assured of having all of the implementation that's required to be done before the transition occurs actually accomplished, both operationally and through agreed-upon bylaws changes, the final plan has to be approved by the chartering organizations before the end of the year, to be assured of that. The simplest way to get that would be to take the second version that was commented upon over the last 40 days up to mid-September and make some adjustments to that and forward it. But, of course, the board has made clear that it will not support either a sole member model or a designator model. With the board's predisposition, depending on the community's reaction to that, it would require extensive work to create a new plan, which would have to be stress-tested and I believe, personally, would have to be put out for public comment to be assured that it they haven't missed anything and that it truly has community consensus support. And Matthew Weil, one of the co-chairs of the CCWG, has stated that that process would delay the presentation of a final report till late January to mid-February, which would miss the deadline that the NCIA and the board have said needs to be met to be assured of getting this done without another IANA contract extension. And unless anyone has questions about anything in that memo that I sent out, and I don't see any hands up, I believe that's an excellent segue over to our policy coordinator, Steve Del Bianco, to review the current policy calendar that he distributed. And there's going to be something on a request for reconsideration, but the main subject of his presentation is going to be what we're looking at up to and in Dublin on accountability, which is pretty much going to fill all the available space in Dublin. So, Steve, let me turn it over to you.
Thanks, Phil. Welcome, everyone. Thank you to Terry for displaying in the chat window the policy calendar that I emailed to you all yesterday. I'll go through this quickly. Under recently filed, I'll highlight only one since our last call, which was on the 5th of October, our comment on ICANN's draft plan for the key signing key on the root zone. Angie Graves drafted that. Steve Coates, thanks for your helpful input. It is a brief, to-the-point comment, and Angie drew upon her expertise in Internet security to make a couple of constructive suggestions. So thanks to Angie and Steve for that. Let me jump to the current ICANN public comments. In my belief, there are six open comments that we should comment on that are relevant to the BC. The first is this notion of geonames release in another batch of brand and generic new GTLDs, thanks to Andy Abrams of Google, who repurposed some earlier BC comments that he drafted, and I circulated those on the 21st of September. So we've had our full review period, but I thought I'd wait till this call in case any of you had any edits or suggestions. Otherwise, I will file it this weekend, well ahead of the deadline of the 14th of October. Are there any further comments from BC members on the BC's support for the release of geonames in the brands and a more measured policy for the release in the generics? Looking for hands. And seeing none, I'm going to publish and post that over the weekend. I should note that when I've been posting comments to ICANN, I usually at the same time open up a WordPress session to put it on the business constituency website. I've been unable to do that since about 2 weeks ago. There's a problem in the WordPress access for Jimson and I. Jimson is working on that with our consultants, and I hope to get that remedied. But rest assured that that October 5th comment went into ICANN, even though you can't see it on the business constituency website. The second item under current comments is that ICANN has published a preliminary issues report, and for those of you new to ICANN, these preliminary issues report are the precursor to starting a policy development process, or PDP. And that's the main business that we do in the GNSO, and it's one of the main ways the BC can influence policy that ICANN puts out. Now, the comment period for this was just extended all the way till the 30th of October after Dublin. This gives us an opportunity to consider a draft on this and discuss it extensively in Dublin. I wanted to thank Susan, Phil Corwin, Tim Chen, and Andy Abrams. You've all volunteered to do that drafting, and I realize the extended deadline feels like it takes the pressure off, but we really do need a draft, if just bullet points, that we can all discuss in Dublin when the BC convenes. Any questions on that or additional volunteers that want to help them?
Steve, this is Susan. I have read the report. I've got notes, but I do not have a draft yet, but hopefully by Monday. That's my goal.
That'd be fantastic. And again, if it's bullet points of what you think the major points are, that is also helpful to circulate to BC members while you then polish the pros for the finished project.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you again. Anyone else? Good. The third item is the affirmation of commitments requires a review, forward reviews. You guys are very familiar with them. One of the reviews is a review of the extent to which the new GTLD program improved consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. And it's also a review of the application and evaluation process for new GTLD applicants. There are, in fact, 9 reviews surrounding the new GTLD program, some from the GAC, a couple from the board, one from staff, and, of course, the affirmation of commitments review. In this particular one, there have been almost 2 years of work prior to even beginning this affirmation of commitments review, because the BC helped to lead a couple of working groups that devised metrics to assess whether the new GTLDs added to consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. And we said the only way you can know whether you've improved something is if you measured it before the expansion and then measured it again after the expansion and said, did it improve? So this was a radical concept at ICANN, but we were able to push it through despite opposition from the non-commercial stakeholders group. And we now have a set of metrics that we've established. This item is an opportunity to comment on the Phase 1 study, which looks at the baseline on competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the GTLD space. We do need a couple of BC volunteers who can take a look at this baseline study and offer some comment on it. I'll look for some volunteers now. And again, this is about the new GTLD program. So any of you who have a big interest in either, you know, using new GTLDs to promote your brands, maybe even buying your own TLD at the top level for your company, or even protecting your company's interests, we'll want to take a look at this Phase 1 study report. The volunteers who step up for this would also be in a good position to help represent the BC when the Affirmation of Commitments review team convenes. That will probably be by the end of this year. All right, we'll reiterate those volunteer calls when we all convene in Dublin. The fourth one is a favorite of Phil Corwin's. It's this notion of what does ICANN do with the $60 million of auction proceeds it received for the new GTLDs. The comments have just been extended, and they are not due until the 8th of November. Phil Corwin and Angie Graves are drafting a BC comment on that. And Phil and Angie, do you have anything you want to add to what you're thinking right now before we circulate your draft?
Well, thank you, Steve. Angie and I attended a domain conference in Florida a week ago, and we sat down and talked through, we reviewed the staff paper on this and talked through things we wanted to raise in the BC comment. We talked about, we had about a 30-40 minute conversation on that. Angie has sent me an initial draft. Earlier this week, I've been so overwhelmed with other things going on, I haven't reviewed it yet, but I'm going to get you something by the weekend, so we're going to have something to discuss way before November 8th and plenty of time to put it into final shape by the comment deadline.
Bill, thank you. I do think it would be helpful. When we're face-to-face in Dublin, people are really going to get tired of talking about accountability, so let's be sure and find room in our agenda to sound out BC members on the general tone of our position on this auction. And Susan, the notion of the item you just talked about volunteering for too, the preliminary issues report for the next round. It'd be great to fit 10 to 15 minute chunks of discussion in the BC meeting so that we can exchange views on those drafts. Thank you. Number five, we just had a report that was published by the Implementation Advisory Group. This is a working group that's proposing revisions to the procedure ICANN uses when the WHOIS service and the requirements in the RAA, when the WHOIS service conflicts with the privacy laws of a jurisdiction, usually a national set of privacy laws. And when that happens, there are going to be restrictions on the way that that registry or registrar can reveal WHOIS information on an individual who claims to be under the jurisdiction of those privacy laws of that country. So it's a rather legalistic concern, and it ought to matter to any BC member who considers himself a big user of WHOIS, or a BC member that's very concerned about concealing the privacy of things that they would do when they register a domain name. We need some volunteers from the BC who are very familiar with the use of WHOIS to look at this new report and understand it better. As you well know, there have been several registrars who've applied for and received from ICANN an exemption from their WHOIS requirements by claiming they were under the jurisdiction of a national set of privacy laws. There must be a problem in Adobe because all the volunteer buttons don't seem to be working today. Come on, people. Somebody cares about WHOIS.
I care about WHOIS, Steve, but...
Oh, you cannot volunteer. You are completely...
I know.
You're overcommitted. I won't let you do it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll keep pushing on this when we get together. The last one is the new GTLD program has an implementation review, and there's a draft report. And those comments now close December the 7th. So this is about reviewing how well the GTLD program was implemented. And this is one of the 9 reviews I spoke of earlier, and this one is a staff review. So staff is sort of coming up with their initial assessment of how well they did at implementing the policies that were together in the guidebook. So that one is a set of ideals that would be ideally the same group in the BC who handles these new GTLD subsequent procedures. That's number 2 in the list in front of you. So anybody who's looking at number 2, it would be great for you to pick up on what's in number 6. We could have one group of volunteers who comes together and drafts both comments for 2 and 6. So that's why Susan and Phil, Tim and Andy wouldn't mind having you guys take another look at number 6 as well. All right, everyone. I don't see any hands there, so let me move to the next item. The next item I had on the agenda, Phil, was the reconsideration request for the URS decision that was made in .travel, and then I could turn to the accountability question if you'd like. Is that all right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me speak briefly to reconsideration. This is fairly simple. The BC, along with some other constituencies dating back to the Buenos Aires meeting, we filed comments and raised concerns regarding the fact that URS had been inserted in the .travel, .cat, and .pro renewal registry agreements. It wasn't over the substance of the URS. It was about the fact that ICANN GDD staff had decided on their own that for the sake of consistency, including RPMs from the new TLD program, should be included as legacy GTLDs come up. So we filed those comments. They were non-controversial on the procedural basis within the BC. On September 28th, the ICANN board approved all 3 of the agreements with the RPMs in them, but in the resolution, they noted that no legacy GTLD was obligated to put these in, but could do so on a voluntary basis, and that these were the result of bilateral negotiation. So the only issue is whether it was truly voluntary when a small registry needing its agreement renewed is told at the beginning of negotiations that inclusion should be the starting point. We've been asked by the non-commercial stakeholder group whether we would file a joint request for reconsideration. My recommendation is that we do so. If we do so, it must be within 15 days of the board decision, which is next Tuesday, the 13th. I intend to draft a very brief RFR later today, focusing strictly on the voluntary aspect, and I think it would be useful for us just to I don't believe there's any real chance that the board's going to reverse themselves on this, but I think it's good to use the accountability methods that we have available as of now on something where we've had a consistent position and that this would be a good opportunity to do work cooperatively with the NCSG, and that can hopefully have benefits down the road on other issues. So I've heard from one BC member who had no objection to going forward on this, but wanted to make sure we noted that registries could adopt those RPMs voluntarily. And again, I don't think we have a quarrel with that notion. It's whether the concern is whether it's truly voluntary when staff presents it. So I already talked enough. I'll certainly circulate the draft request for reconsideration in the next 24 hours and share it with the NCSG, and members will have a chance to weigh in on it. So unless there are questions, I see Chris Wilson and Andy Abrams.
So we can manage the queue on this one. I wanted to note 2 things.
In the
window, I put a hyperlink to the reconsideration page at ICANN. And let me note for all of you that you don't draft a letter from scratch. I filed a few reconsiderations, and you fill out a form. There's a Word doc form. I'll put that hyperlink in the window as well, and it's on that page. So don't start writing a letter, Phil. Instead, go directly to the form and fill it out.
Yeah, I know that, Steve. I've already checked that out, and I have the form downloaded. It's a very specific format.
Got it. Hey, Chris Wilson, you're up first.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Bill. And I appreciate your comments, and I think we would agree that, you know, the question of what is truly voluntary is something, a nuance that we, the BC, should consider. I support, you know, the approach taken where we can sort of recognize that if a registry on its own volition wants to accept the new RPMs, that they should be able to do so, but also recognizing that, ICANN shouldn't thwart the process and impose the new ones on legacy ones, on legacy GTLDs without the consensus process being followed. So I think we're on the same page, and I appreciate your acknowledgement.
Well, thank you, Chris. And before I hear from Andy, I just want to note, while it's not on Steve's list, there's going to be a staff issues report on the new TLD RPMs delivered in the next week. We know it's going to be delivered because it's on the discussion schedule for the council meeting, and there's a standalone session to discuss it during the ICANN meeting. So that paper is coming any day now, and it's going to kick off probably a PDP on whether they should be adjusted in any way. It may even row into a PDP in terms of review of the UDRP for all TLDs. So this issue is not going away. It's just about who's going to make the policy decisions. Andy?
Thanks, Phil. This is Andy Abrams. I'm also supportive of Chris's caveat that we should definitely make it clear that voluntary acceptance of RPMs by registry is definitely acceptable. And I also like the addition of if it chooses sua sponte, that might be something that we can add in there in the language to ensure that it's truly voluntary and not sort of a power play by ICANN. We certainly don't want ICANN to unilaterally be pushing these RPMs on registries. So I'm supportive as well.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Phil. The key question on that form, as you probably already know, is number 6, when it says, describe how you are materially affected by the action. And I guess the key, based on the discussion so far, is describe that material impact in terms of the policy process and not necessarily how BC members are affected by the presence or absence or use of URS. Do I have that right?
Yes, and that's how I intend to frame the RFR. To state that our material interest is assuring that as a participant in the GNSO and in ICANN's bottom-up policy-making process, we want to make sure that consensus policies are developed by the community and not imposed by staff. So that'll be, how I plan to address that. But it is about how the decision affects us from a policy development standpoint, not from an actual effect standpoint.
Outstanding. And a lot of that prose, as you well know, since you were one of the drafters, a lot of that prose for describing that impact is in the BC comments that were filed on both the CAT and the travel new GTLD renewals.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Phil.
Tell us how we're going to get to closure on accountability in Dublin.
Oh, gosh. You really want to jump to that, huh? Okay.
Well, it's the mastodon in the room, not the elephant.
Yeah, it's bigger. It's a whole herd of elephants if you check with what my schedule's been like. Because in addition to representing the CSG, I'm the principal author of all of the stress testing that's done, and there's almost 40 pages of that in the proposal, as well as on Work Party 1, articulating how to bring the affirmation of commitments and the reviews into ICANN bylaws. And since I'm a rapporteur, I'm part of the leadership group that meets before and after every single CCWG call. And there the focus is on achieving consensus within the community and bringing this to closure so that we can do the IANA transition, achieve the accountability enhancements we want, get approval, pass through from the board of directors, as well as a blessing from NTIA and the U.S. government, and meet the U.S. Congress's very helpful mandate that ICANN has to implement what the community has asked for in terms of accountability before the transition can occur. Now, trying to stitch all that together when the community has consensus would have been merely difficult. but doing so when the board is trying to block much of what we're trying to do makes it nearly impossible. So Phil talked a little earlier on the call, and on our last call, it was the run-up before we all went to Los Angeles for a two-day meeting of the cross-community working group. And it was clear. I went into that meeting with a mandate that all of you approved, and it was be very firm about the five community powers and the IRP, but be flexible about the method to get it done. And I arrived in Los Angeles with that flexibility in mind. But the board tries to follow the lead of its general counsel and its outside attorneys at Jones Day, who believe, I guess, that the way to frame a discussion is to draw a line and declare that the board will not allow that line to be crossed. And that happened early on when they drew a line and said they would not accept a membership model. Their initial rationale didn't quite hold water, since they were worried about membership giving too many statutory rights that could spin out of control. And we had an answer for that several weeks ago. Our attorneys for the CCWG had given us a plan to restrain the use of any of the statutory powers that we didn't think we should have. ICANN's attorneys didn't agree that it could be done that way. So there was a disagreement among the attorneys, and it contributed to the board's decision to do so. I think that ICANN's legal team really seems to be fulfilling their earned reputation for trying to protect the corporation from the community, and that's unfortunate right now. We heard the board say many times that our proposal contained elements of accountability that they were 100% behind, but that the membership step, they said, was akin to restructuring and that it would be destabilizing. And frankly, most of us can't understand that, because in the CCWG, everything we've done uses the existing structure of ACs and SOs defined in the ICANN bylaws. So there is no restructuring. We're simply activating the membership gene that is latent in every California nonprofit corporation, is already in the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws, in order to get the enforceability of the powers. So I went to LA with an intent to be flexible, and I'm also your policy counselor, so I'm used to trying to find a way to find a compromise, find a way forward so we can keep consensus and get it done. And that led me to pick up on a offhand suggestion we heard in Los Angeles from Jonathan Zook. It was a little four-sentence flyer, he called it, of, hey, why don't we just postpone membership to Workstream 2 as long as we get the powers we need in Workstream 1 to impose it. So right after L.A., I expanded upon that with a one-page plan, a Zook Del Bianco plan, and that was attached. I did a link to it on today's policy calendar and sent it to all of you last week. I expressed it as my personal idea for a way forward, and that didn't represent it as a CSG or as a BC position. The reason for that is it's not a position. It's a path forward that preserves the position of giving us the community powers with adequate enforceability and a fail-safe that says, if years from now ICANN turns out not to be following the bylaws and the enforceability in the bylaws is insufficient, that we could activate the membership gene by having a governance review with the power to spill the board if the board wouldn't accept this change to membership. I have to say that for the most part I got broad support for this as a way forward, because it would allow us to get this transition done well before next summer by postponing any of this very difficult consideration of the move to membership and instead focus on the five community powers and the IRP. As long as we have adequate, but not ironclad enforceability on all five of those powers. So the board indicated complete agreement with that idea until Monday night. And on Monday night, right before the last CCWG call, Steve Crocker sent a note on behalf of the board, drawing yet another line in the sand, saying, oh, while we're at it, if you're thinking about moving to designator, which is a much lesser form of statutory right than member, we're going to draw a line against designator too. And Phil noted that in the beginning of the call, and that's a line, but it's a line in the sand, and the good thing about lines in the sand is you can kick the sand out of the way. And I don't believe at all that we have to be ruling out designator simply because the chairman wrote it in a memo on Monday night. I think membership is on the one end of the extreme. It's the most enforceable method. Just trusting it in the bylaws may not be enough. And the middle ground between the two is the notion of designator. And our attorneys have told us they think we are already a designator organization. We may or may not be. I don't know that. But activating designator enables us to have some degree of statutory enforcement on things like removing the board of directors. It doesn't provide any statutory powers on the budget, but I believe that's something we can give on because we are already written a bylaws procedure to block the budget up to 2 times and then reverting to last year's budget, potentially plus 10% or last year's budget alone. And the BC was strong about that, of not wanting to have an infinite series of budget vetoes that resulted in deadlock. So the key to making this palatable to everyone is the notion that 2 years down the road, if the designator or bylaws only is not enough, we would be able to invoke a governance review. The governance review could recommend something as strong as activating the membership gene. And if it did so, the board would have to muster 2/3 majority to block it. And they would only be able to cite the global public interest as the rationale, which is relatively easy to do. We would then have a consultation with the board. And if we in the community had a consensus, not unanimity, but a consensus, we would put our proposal right back on the table, and it would now take 3/4 majority of the board to block it. If they block that, we've got to revert to the power of dumping the board and electing who from the GNSO, who from the CCNSO, et cetera, electing board members who would understand they needed to accept this plan, and then we put it back into the queue. So I call removing the board the nuclear option. And it's not something that will be easy to exercise. It's incredibly disruptive and should be reserved for extraordinary circumstances like this, something years down the road where we don't get the enforceability that everybody assured us we'd have. We activate the nuclear option. It would not be disruptive to ICANN in the sense that all the powers, all the hard work of describing the community powers has been done in phase one. It's being done now prior to the transition. Therefore, the final future-proofing of moving to membership just activates a greater degree of enforceability. I would say at this point there's plenty of interest in the path forward in the Del Bianco Zook plan, but I'm not out there beating a drum to carry it. Others are, because, again, my role there was to try to find a way forward. So, Phil, with that, I'm happy to take a cue with suggestions from members or questions. Thank you.
Yeah, and
go ahead, Phil.
Steve, I just want to start by thanking you for your tireless efforts. I've only been on about 30% to 40% of all these accountability calls, unless on the work party calls. But the amount of time that's gone in is just tremendous. It's very dispiriting when the board essentially rejects 10 months of work, and then Crocker's intervention again this week on designator, saying they won't accept a model that our attorneys are telling us we already have, which is somewhat bizarre. The most bizarre thing I found this week was a comment in the Jones Day memo echoed in some board comments that the board sufficiently represents the global internet community to understand the global public interest, but that the ICANN community is not sufficiently representative, which I found quite astounding and offensive. But I think we're all going to try to rise above these issues we've had and try to be as constructive as possible in Dublin. I did circulate just before the call a statement from just issued on October 8th, but made public just now by the European Commission High-Level Group on Internet Governance and the Council of European National Top-Level Domain Registries, that center essentially supporting the CCWG's second proposal as the one that reflects the multi-stakeholder process that should go forward. So we'll just have to see where the CCWG center of gravity is in Dublin. And let me stop talking there. Andy Harris and then Chris Wilson have hands up for comments. So go ahead, Andy.
Thanks, and also to reiterate, of course, the thanks to Steve for all of your work here. We're really reliant on you, not only just carrying the water for all of us, but also all the input and feedback that you're giving us and catching us up to speed is really helpful, too. So, you know, I, like many others, have found the board's reaction here to be really problematic, and and especially this latest salvo from Steve Crocker, and just sort of saying, you know, designators off the table too, and making an argument that was seemingly substantively inaccurate, because he said they had the same problems with the membership models with designator, and that really can't be true given the differences. But then just the fact that they're sort of directing the multi-stakeholder community to move on to something else and essentially move on to our plan is deeply problematic. So what I'm curious about is there something that can be done more broadly beyond the CCWG for the ICANN community as a whole, and maybe even others, to send messages directly to the board saying, you know, you need to you've weighed in, you've had your say, now you need to let the bottom up multi-stakeholder community work through its process and put forward a plan that it thinks is most sufficient. And you know, I'm wondering if there are ways that very, very strong messages can be sent to the board and then through that to the U.S. government, who's watching closely. One idea that we were thinking about internally here is thinking back to the GNSO statement, the joint statement from London, that helped kick off a lot of this accountability work, that said this has to be part of the IANA transition. So I'm wondering if something like that, of reviving that statement, bringing that back from everyone in the GNSO to remind the board about that strong statement that was made back in London. But I'm just wondering if there are things like that that can be done where the broader community beyond CCWG can push back on the board and say enough is enough, let the community do its work. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. It's Steve. Let me quickly respond to that. I appreciate the sentiment. I do believe that the Congress will stick to the sentiments in the Dot-Com Act that was approved unanimously in the House. And the Dot-Com Act says you cannot transition the IANA until you have implemented the bylaws changes for accountability. And that governmental statement, I hope to hear more from Congress, from both houses of Congress, from both parties in the next couple of weeks to help for them to reiterate that. So if you have contacts in Senate Commerce Committee, let them know we'd love to hear a reiteration of the dot-com sentiment. That would be helpful there, and that you can do without much of a lift. The second thing I would say is that the board will not be persuaded by comments from the business community on this. Their attorneys have persuaded the board that their fiduciary duty to the corporation is to ensure that the corporation represents broad community interests. And in fact, they think that a handful of business interests, primarily North American, have captured the voice of so much of what happens in this process. And the board is now saying that the real problem with membership was that we're not sure that the ACs and SOs are sufficiently representative, and therefore we as a board, our role, our fiduciary duty to the globe, to the world, is to protect the world from a handful of businesses driving something through. I kid you not. And this is the sentiment that they're under, and the legal team has convinced the board that that's their obligation. Therefore, a series of notes from people telling the board to stand down, I don't think will have any effect at all on that legal argument. Instead, I believe that all of our energy should be at achieving consensus while in Dublin around something we can do and implement, and that is to lock in the five powers plus the IRP with a degree of enforcement, a degree of enforceability that we can live with. So it's our minimum acceptable enforceability. I agree with you, the designator is fundamentally different than membership. And if the community came together and said, we want these five powers, which the board has already said they agree with, we've decided how they ought to be implemented, and we're going to enforce them with designator. If we come together and back that plan, that's the most impact we could have at moving this ahead, because then the board would see that for them to block that would mean they stood against the entire community. And I don't believe they would do that. I think they blink.
Do you think that the CCWG community is willing to back a designator model, even given Steve's email? Thank you.
Yeah, I really do, because the community sentiment right now is exactly what you've expressed and Phil expressed. They're really upset at the board drawing lines in the sand without adequate explanation and very late in the process. Remember, we've been talking about designator versus member for 10 months. 10 months. And they wait till the last month to tell us that there's something inherently unstable about it. There's enough sentiment that if we all came together and gathered around something, it shouldn't be that we want to go back to the membership, because I believe that a compromise means you give a little. And what we give is we give the enforceability of membership, and we get the enforceability of designator, which is less, and we give by deferring consideration of membership, even though we've preserved the power to activate that gene years down the road. And I do think if the community can come together on that, and one of the keys is the ALAC, the At-Large Advisory Committee, they had preferred designator all along, and we're not all that comfortable with membership. So I believe that as a huge benefit to this is that ALAC would come on board. We'd have support from the NCSG, registries and registrars, so I think GNSO would be solid, ALAC would be solid. If CCNSO comes on board, I think we can do it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's hear from Chris Wilson and Aparna. If anybody else wants to comment on this, raise your hand now. Otherwise, I'm going to shut the queue down on this in the interest of time, because I think we can still fit in the other items, but we're starting to get compressed here. Chris?
Thanks, Bill. Thank you again, Steve, for your tireless work. Some of the conversation you just had with Andrew, I think, was dovetailing with what I was going to raise. In particular, the notion of sort of forcing the ICANN board's hand here and getting the community, I guess, notwithstanding the ICANN board, to put forward a proposal, including that would include a structural mechanism, and make them sort of take it or leave it to a certain extent. I'm a little concerned about not having a structural mechanism in place until conceivably after the transition is effectuated. But I'd rather see the community, whether it be the membership model or the designator model, come up with a comprehensive mechanism that can then that we can rally around and then demonstrate to not just the ICANN community, but the sort of the world writ large, including, by the way, NTIA and Congress, that we've got something we believe in, and it's the only obstacle right now is the ICANN board. I think that while albeit messy, I think is the preferable route, I guess, from my perspective, if that makes sense.
You know, let me just remind you, though, I've spent the last 3 weeks analyzing public comment. There were plenty of public commenters other than the board who had concerns about the move to membership with the weighted voting. So I would never suggest that we had community consensus already about the membership model. So we have to work hard to get community consensus around something like designator. And I don't think it's quite structural. It's really statutory. It's statutory enforcement powers without changing the structure one bit. The structure of ICANN would still be ACs and SOs.
Okay, and Aparna and Andy and Chris, just lower your hands if you're done. Go ahead, Aparna.
Thanks. Steve, just one question for you. Do you have a sense of, I think I agree that getting community consensus among everyone except the board is sort of the first task on hand. Do you have a sense of whether if the community can come together, and it sounds like at least from my review of the email traffic, that things are heading in a positive direction among the CCWG. Is there going to be a concern that NTIA still will not find that the proposal represents a full consensus if the board takes a dissenting position?
Hey, Aparna, thank you. It's Steve. I've had discussions with staff at NTIA, made sure the Congress understood that. I think the strength of our two things, the strength of our consensus, the breadth of it, how good our proposal is and well explained, and the fact that we actually compromise from where we were in August. Those three things taken together, I think, would be persuasive to NTIA. And I know your relationships there are quite good as well. And let's keep floating that trial balloon with NTIA over the next several days. So far, I've heard that it's really a function of the community. NTIA does not have a position one way or the other. on membership or designator statutory powers. They want the community to have a strongly held consensus about a well-explained, well-rationalized plan for accountability that supports the CWG stewardship, because they realized that accountability was a second track that NTIA never asked for, but they agreed later on that it could become a condition for the transition. You have any other thoughts on that, Aparna, from your interactions with government?
I don't. I asked the question because I wasn't sure what the answer was, so that's helpful.
Okay. Well, thank you, Aparna. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to close out that discussion by, again, thanking you for your tireless work. We're all going to be focused on this in Dublin and trying to be as constructive as possible while I think there's clearly consensus for getting strong community powers and as strong enforcement as is feasible and that we can get community consensus on. You know, there is a danger here that if there's gridlock, that it would lead to a view that the multi-stakeholder model doesn't work. I see the model working great. The problem is the board refusing to go along with what the community is developing and being so obstructionist. But let's see what we can accomplish in Dublin. Moving on very quickly, we've got 12 minutes left. I'm going to cover the council stuff and the CSG report, because I don't believe David Farris is on. He's tied up at a conference. Very quickly.
I'm actually on.
Oh, you are on, David. Okay. Yeah. I know you're not in the chat room. So let me run quickly through what's going on at council. We had a council call on 9/24, September 24th, approved two resolutions, one on approving an operating procedure for the contracted party house to select a board seat. And that was non-controversial. And another non-controversial one, he approved the transmission of the recommendations report to the board following public comments on the council's recommendation that the board adopt the final report from the translation and transliteration of GTL data working group. So those two resolutions were passed. We passed a resolution that was on the consent agenda. We passed a separate resolution requesting that staff extend the comment period on the new GTLD secondary round preliminary issues report, and that extension was subsequently granted by staff. And the last item to note is that the council meeting during the ICANN meeting, not the 2 days of weekend council proceedings, but the one on Wednesday, is a two-part meeting. The first is composed of the old councilors. That meeting dissolves. The new council members are seated. The old ones depart. And immediately there will be an election for council chair and then selection of vice chairs. We have an unusual situation. I'm not sure how this is going to play out or be resolved. On our side of the house, the non-contracted party side, the CSG and the NCSG have agreed on a common candidate for chair, Heather Forrest of the IPC. On the contracted party side, there are the registries and registrars are supporting James Bladell of GoDaddy as their chair. I don't know what happens if one house votes for one and the other for the other, how that's resolved. I guess I'm going to have to become educated on that between now and Wednesday of the ICANN meeting, but there will be a new chair elected, and then there is an opportunity for the non-contracted side to have a chair for the first time in quite a while. So moving on, David's going to give a CSG report, particularly on Dublin planning. I want to note that this morning I circulated a draft BC schedule for Dublin. Let me explain what this is. This is simply a schedule of the key items from the GNSO counselor, the key items from the CSG counselor, and plus the private closed BC meetings. It is by no means a list of all the other sessions of interest in Dublin. There are many other sessions during the meeting of interest to many BC members, but you all have access to the full schedule and can make your own decisions on which to attend, and hopefully we'll get some wide attendance at most of them, and members will be able to report back at our Tuesday meeting and other meetings on what's going on those subjects. So, David, over to you on planning for Dublin by the CSG.
Great. Thanks, Phil. And thanks for also circulating the draft CSG agenda for me to the list. In the interest of time, I won't go through the agenda, but it follows and tracks the usual meeting schedule that we have for the CSG at the ICANN meetings. I guess just one other real issue to cover, maybe two issues to cover and update people on, is we need to identify the list of issues that we would like to present to the board in the open session on Tuesday. I can tell you the IPC will cover two of these three issues, the WHOIS reviews, contract compliance versus content regulation versus voluntary enforcement, and the third is accountability in the board's interaction with the CCWG. The ISPs are going to cover universal acceptance and proposals for an ISP technical stream and issues related to the GNSO structural reform. We have not yet discussed what issues we would like to present. It looks like we're going to be presenting two per constituency because you might recall that in Buenos Aires, we were only given 1 hour as the CSG with the board, and we negotiated an extra 30 minutes. That was a very very difficult time constraints for the constituencies, and everyone ran over. So we're trying to work to keep each constituency to two issues. So I will post to the list. We can have a discussion now if we have time, Phil, but if not, I can post to the list a question of what issues we would like to address, and just recall that we're trying not to overlap on the issues from other constituents.
Right. I see our partner's hand up, but I believe that's from the prior discussion. We've got about one or two minutes now if anyone has an idea now, but it might be most productive if you circulate to the BC private list that list you just read of the topics that the other constituencies are going to be covering, and that'll help us pick two other issues that we want to focus on, and we can get that done over the next couple of days and have that decided before we head for Dublin.
That sounds good. And then I will just add to that whether there are any issues that we want to address in the CSG session itself, the internal CSG session. All right, I'll send that around tomorrow latest. Thanks. That's all I have.
Okay. And Jimson, turning to you, anything on operations and finance in our remaining 6 minutes here?
Yeah, Jimson speaking. Thank you, Phil and Steve, for the smart work you're doing. Steve, I would like to say that kindly emphasize as well when you make your presentation that it's not only businesses from North America that is articulating those positions. Businesses from all from Africa, they are behind it, and also from Asia as well, because I even took a census in the leadership meeting of businesses in Asia, that is Tuesday, Wednesday, and it was unanimous. They are fully in support of BC position, especially on accountability. So please still always mention that businesses from Africa and Asia are fully behind you. I will say that on finance, I want to say that there are 25 members that have paid so far, 35 to go, and I would like to urge those that are yet to pay to work on this, especially that BC officers' election will be coming up soon. Before then, the second invoice will be dispatched to members with payment pending. There are a few members who are processing their fees through ICANN on special arrangements. However, I'm hopeful that by next year we'll be in a position to handle all payments independent of ICANN. I would like to reiterate that Messrs. Greenberg and Lieberman Law Firm, they have commenced work on registering BC as a not-for-profit entity, enable us to secure our EIN and PID, as I mentioned earlier. The firm will also file our annual returns as a not-for-profit organization, not-for-profit organization. On operations, there will be a BC officer election early November, as our acting chair mentioned, Phil. So details will be made available at our Dublin meeting. Also, we are currently rebranding the BC website to be more adaptive and responsive in line with our approved FY16 operational plan and to be ready by end of November. And Steve, just to mention that the glitch on the website has been corrected, and so you can actually post the comment now. So on
Thank
outreach,
you,
yes, the outreach event in Malaysia was very successful. As a matter of fact, I'm speaking to you from Malaysia, and I should be back to Abuja tomorrow. I'd like to thank the outreach committee and the MAC, Mary Lee and Helen Blankley, for the smart work they did on that, and making sure this is possible. Over 900 delegates all across Asia were at that leadership meeting, and they gave me full audience in the presentation. And as I said, they were all fully behind all the work BC is doing, and we are very, very happy about the state so far. In fact, about four CEOs that said they are going to join BC almost immediately. So that is basically an update for me. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jimson, and thank you for noting the support from Africa and other parts of the developing world for BC positions. I know from my chairmanship of the Credentials Committee that our representation from those parts of the world has been growing steadily, and we wanted to see it keep growing. The more viewpoints we have from around the world, the better job we can do. I think it's just great when we get that interest from beyond North America and Europe and Australia, which have been ICANN's base for years, but it's a global internet, and we need global input within the BC and the entire ICANN community, and we have that, but we need more of it. I don't have any other business other than to say that we're all going to be very busy in Dublin. It's a meeting where we're going to be widely dispersed in different hotels. There is no big convention hotels attached to the conference center. Many of us will be a mile to 2 miles away from the conference center. But we have activities scheduled that bring the BC together in Dublin, and we're going to, we may, there's nothing listed now, we may, when needed, schedule informal meetups toward the end of the day. It's been our practice in the past, particularly if there's something we need to discuss on developments on accountability, where we can get some sentiment from the BC members there to guide Steve's interfacing with the CCWG's work in Dublin. So, anyone have any other business they want to bring up? It's 1 hour sharp, but if there's something someone wants to bring up. And the last thing I want to say in reference to the upcoming elections, we know for sure that the position of chair is going to be wide open. I'm just serving as interim chair. The charter does not permit me to run again, and I have no interest in running. I'm plenty busy with council activities and other ICANN-related activities. So there's a great opportunity for someone who wants to handle the leadership of the BC and be one of the supporting organization leaders interfacing with ICANN management. So start thinking about that. I know we have many people on the BC who could step up to that position and do a great job, and we hope to see one of them do so. Well, more than one. We'd like to see, at least two volunteers, two nominees, and to give the BC a good choice from among excellent candidates. I don't see any hands up. I'm hearing no intervention on the phone. I'm going to call this meeting to a close. We wrapped up 1 minute over the limit, but we started 2 minutes late, so we kept within time. Safe travel to everybody to Dublin, and I arrive there next Thursday afternoon. I know that Susan Calaguchi and I have an all-day privacy proxy meeting on Friday, when Steve's in an all-day CCWG meeting on accountability, and then council meetings all weekend. So it'll be a busy time in Dublin, and I look forward to seeing all of you there and raising a pint or a glass of whiskey at the end of one of the days. So safe travel to all.
Thank
you. We can end the recording.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.